Right now it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us on a Monday morning live. We rebroadcast Arthur during the week. And also you can catch Arthur 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, and you will hear Arthur Schwartz. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. How are you in this? I don't know, how horrible has the winter been up there?
It hasn't been horrible.
It's been pretty cold.
We had 17 inches of snow in November. We had no snow in December. In January, we've had about 8 inches of snow. We've had bitter cold weather on and off, but we've also had it moderate with, you know, temperatures around 45, 50. So, yeah, I guess because it gets warm.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, March gone.
But you know, because it's warm at one point, when it gets bitter cold, it even feels even colder. I mean, you know, what the heck? What can you do, Arthur?
There's nothing you can do. It's January, and it's soon to be February. Now, I always thought that Super Bowl was in January, but this year it's the first weekend in February, and I see already online that people are gearing up with 4 million zillion chicken wing recipes. Is that the only thing? I don't watch Super Bowl, so although, you know, I do enjoy the commercials, but you can see those the day after. So I don't know. I haven't been to a Super Bowl party in 25 years,
actually,
at least.
It's the best thing about Super Bowl parties is there's always chili and there's always pulled pork. And chicken wings. Those are three staples.
Wings, right?
And chicken wings. And
that seems to be the food of the year. Just by glancing at the internet.
And it's the most horrible. It's the worst food for you possible. And people pick at it all day long.
Yeah, I know. Well, I had a friend. Now this was he was in fact a very fancy caterer who did dinner parties for very rich people, and he was also I don't want people to know who it is, so he also was the executive chef at a major bank, where his job was not only to cook for the executives, although he had a staff that really did it, but also to recommend restaurants. Anyway, every year New Year's Day he would have obviously, one of the most memorable parties I ever went to, and I went to it for years. And the main feature was, in his New York City little kitchen, a huge pot of chili on the stove, and you were there to help yourself and garnish it at will with cheese, onion, lime wedges, whatever he put out. And then there was also big baskets of fried chicken, which, of course, he had fried, or somebody had fried for him early in the morning. And then he would pass around the new hors d'oeuvre he was introducing that year to his fancy clients. And he invented some interesting party food. Like, I know that he had the first mini. They weren't even sliders. They were the size of 50-cent pieces, hamburgers on tiny buns. Of course, he had to bake the buns himself to make them that small, and other things like that. And of course, it always ended with passed around chocolate truffles. Now, that was a great party, I have to say. And as I said, the main feature was chili and fried chicken. I've done some similar things myself, you know, where you set it all up in the kitchen, you let everybody go in and help themselves. It's a nice way to have a party, actually.
You know, it is, but you know, the Prindles put on a Super Bowl party for many years in a row, and it benefited us, and I used to help out. There's so much work when you're hosting a Super Bowl party. It's just disgustingly a lot of work, and you don't get a chance to enjoy it, so.
I think any party is a lot of work for the host.
Yeah.
No?
Oh, yeah, but
if it looks easy, it ends up not being easy.
That's exactly right. You know, it looks like, how hard can it be to pick out chicken wings
and stuff? Oh, yeah, I'll just put this stuff out, and they'll take care of themselves. Yeah, but it doesn't always happen.
You know what the Interlaken's doing up here, which is a smart idea? You can call them. You can order chicken wings. You can order all the stuff. They'll have it ready for you, so you just pick it up and serve it at your house.
I know, but still, the serving, you know what? Yeah. the serving is a good part of the whole hosting process.
That's it. You've got not only do you have to be a good host, you have to be...
And cleaning up.
That's it. There you go. That's the worst.
Yeah, and cleaning up. In fact, I think I mentioned this on the air more than once, that I often, if not always, leave the pots and pans from the night before in the sink so that the first thing I have to do in the morning is wash pots and pans. But I've discovered it's very good for the arthritis in my hands to be under the hot water. And this reminds me of how I woke up this morning. Everything I looked at sort of reminded me how old I am. It makes me feel old. because I somehow heard this on TV the other day, just in passing. I wasn't watching anything, but my ears perked up when I heard the favorite food of millennials. I think millennials millennials are now 30-ish. Is that correct? I'm not sure.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, the favorite food of millennials is soup. That was. It's hard for me to believe that, but... if you saw, there's a new a ramen restaurant in my neighborhood, and it's a chain from Japan. Only has three outlets in the U.S. One in Seattle, one somewhere else in the Northwest, and in Brooklyn. I mean, it must be Portland, because they always say Portland is the West Coast Brooklyn. I have friends in Portland who say that that's true. But they come to Brooklyn a lot, too, so they get it. But so this place, it's soup, after all. I mean, ramen is nothing but a bowl of soup with noodles, and in this case, not many vegetables, if any, a couple of slices of pork belly. So you cannot get into this restaurant. And it is filled with millennials. I went yesterday afternoon thinking the lunch rush would be over at 2 o'clock, and I still was a half an hour wait for a table at 2 o'clock on
Amazing.
A Sunday. But you know what? I went on a Friday like at 5. No, I'm sorry, it wasn't 5. It was also late afternoon, like at 3 o'clock on a Friday, and I couldn't get in at all. I mean, they said forget about it. I keep thinking the Little Indian restaurant next door must be doing well. Because they get to spill over. Nobody can get it. So there you go. Here's this a restaurant that just serves noodle soup, and you can't get in. So maybe that's why they're saying millennials love soup. But, you know, my best-selling book is Soup Suppers, a paperback, which I noted this morning. You can buy for $18 on Amazon, even though I don't know why. Oh, maybe the latest edition is $18 or $19, because the edition I have in my hand is only, I should say the printing. It's all the same edition, but different printings. And my printing is only $16.95. In any case, this book was written more than 25 years ago. I mean, that really made me feel old this morning. 1994 is the copyright, and it's still selling. As I said, I don't make a lot of money from it. I think last year I made $52 in royalties from my book. But you know what? It's better than not getting any royalties, and it's nice to know that it's still in print. And also, I still cook from it, so that's why I never think of it being such an old deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I find that the restaurants are quite the recipes are quite relevant still. Let me say that there's a recipe in here for white borscht. Now, as a Polish boy, do you know what that is?
White borscht?
I don't know.
No, I know.
Yeah,
I know borscht, but I don't know white borscht.
Yeah, you know, we know from real borscht, meat borscht. Yeah, but this was always called white borscht at the Polish coffee shops, I call them, of New York. There are very few left. There's Teresa's here in Brooklyn Heights. But I don't think my recipe, which was a place called Christine's on 2nd Avenue and 26th Street, that's long gone. But what's interesting is that I made the recipe recently because it is cited, it's reprinted in a new memoir by a food editor, Dawn Drizzle, D-R-Z-A-L, very weird name. And she has some memories, it's a memoir, of this restaurant, Christine's, and its white borscht. And then she went to Poland in search of a recipe for white borscht. I'm not sure why she didn't go to a New York restaurant and ask for it. And she didn't find it anywhere. But, of course, she it's called Jurek in Polish. And I think she was looking for the wrong thing. But in any case, she did have my recipe, and this is the recipe she was looking for. So I, it's been published now 25 years later in this memoir. I should try it again. I haven't made it in a long time. It was terrific. I have to say, when I make my own recipe, and it comes out as I expect it will, I'm very pleased with myself. and another another soup that I make often, speaking of Super Bowl, is I don't, you know, I extended the meaning of soup a little bit in this book because they're meant to be main course soups, meaning a soup that you don't really need to have anything with it except some bread, salad maybe. You could make a little dessert, and in fact, the book has some desserts in it. But I often make the chili con carne. That's my extending the definition of soup. The chili con carne that's in this book, which, by the way, is based on the one my mother made all through my childhood, speaking of feeling old. It wasn't until later in his life that my father wanted beans in his chili. So the one that's in my book, it does have kidney beans in it, but you can leave them out. If it was for my father, I would have had to leave them out. But even more often than making that chili con carne, which, by the way, my mother's chili con carne was based on, or was the recipe, from an early edition of the Fanny Farmer cookbook. And when I went off to college, she gave me a paperback version. Well, it wasn't when I went off to college. It was the year after, my sophomore year, when I got my own apartment. She got me a paperback edition of the Fanny Farmer cookbook that she used most often. She used that more often than The Joy of Cooking, which she also owned. But, I don't know, she favored this book. And I still have, the cover has fallen off, but I have the cover. I still have paperback Fanny Farmer here.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Fanny Farmer. My grandmother used to yell at her sisters when they were cooking in the kitchen, "Who do you think you are, Fanny Farmer?"
Fanny Farmer. Fanny Farmer had a cooking school in Boston. And I think the original title of the book, the title of the book is the Boston Cooking School Cookbook, something like Fanny Farmer's Boston Cook. I could look it up, but I don't want to get up out of my chair right now.
You want me to look
so
it up?
The version in Soup Suppers, the chili, I'm looking at it right now, so I'm thinking Fanny Farmer did not call for 6 to 8 large cloves of garlic, chopped or crushed. So I must have upped the ante here, so to speak. I added more onion, more garlic. But otherwise, it's pretty basic. These days, I don't use chili powder that you buy in the supermarket as chili powder. I buy ground chili, and sometimes, because I have them in the house, I grind up my own chilies. That has not always worked that well. I had an excess of guajillo peppers in the house here, and I ground those up and use that chili powder as my chili powder, and I kept adding more and more chili powder. At the end, to get the oomph that I wanted, I also ended up with too much oomph of bitter from the peppers. So you got to be careful about that. But you can buy nowadays, you can buy pure chili powder, even in the supermarket. When I say pure chili powder, it's opposed to the general commercial chili powder that contains, besides chili, usually oregano and cumin. And I just add those to mine. So, chili is, I think, a great thing to make.
You had mentioned
For Super Bowl, but let me say that maybe better even, and nobody's going to scream about this, is my vegetarian chili recipe. And let me just see, is that actually? I'm looking to see if it's vegan or or is it so many things that I make? As I'm making, I'm saying, "Oh my God, this is really vegan."
Vegan chili would be very popular. Just quick.
That's why I'm looking up this recipe, which I somehow can't find so quickly.
Well, while you're multitask.
Please.
If you are using actual ground chilies that you turn into chili powder, is it the same amount?
Well, it depends on the chili. You're going to have to.
So you got a taste.
But you know, Arthur, you recommended beans once
to buy.
You recommended beans, which beans to buy and where you got them, and Jill got them for me for 2 years in a row. And along with that, Jill also got the most incredible chili powder that from that same company. I mean, amazing.
So what's
amazing.
That place in California? What is in it?
I don't know.
What's the name? What's the name of the place in California that you get your beans from? Rancho something? Rancho Gordo.
Rancho Gordo.
Yeah, they also sell some incredible chili oregano and chili powder.
Okay. So I'm looking at this recipe now, and it is indeed vegan. There is nothing at all animal in here, and this really does make me feel old because this recipe from. It was devised, it's called 3-bean vegetable chili, and it is vegan. Although we didn't use the word vegan when I wrote this book 25 years ago, or much less 35 years ago, when Michael McLaughlin owned a restaurant in Greenwich Village called the Manhattan Chili Company.
Right.
He was ahead of his time guy. Very, very tragically, he died super young. I don't even think he was 40 when he died, or about 40. And this restaurant was very popular. Plus, it spawned a book. That book is probably still around, the Manhattan Chili Company Cookbook. And Michael did many other things in his life besides survive this chili recipe, but it was smart. And if vegan was a popular concept then, he would have called it vegan. He was a good marketing guy. But I call it 3-bean vegetable chili, and the 3 beans are fresh string beans, and then you can use cans for the others, red kidney beans, and chickpeas. Chickpeas are a kind of legume bean. So those are the 3 beans. This also has, it's a beautiful recipe. It's very colorful. It has both a diced red pepper and corn in it. By the way, I usually buy frozen corn, if I'm going to use corn. I don't like canned corn so much. Interesting. I don't know why this is so, but in Italy, they sell canned corn, and it's not in a liquid. You open the can, it's vacuum packaged, and those corn kernels in those vacuum cans are delicious.
Do you know what the mark is, what the brand is?
Yeah, Green Giant.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And, And maybe there are other brands as well, but I know that. I know. Pardon me?
No, that Green Giant was exactly what I was asking for. And if you want to, meaning a recognizable brand, but can you get that here?
I've never seen it here. I keep looking, by the way, but I've never seen them in the vacuum can before. And it's always in a liquid, and I don't love the taste. If you're used to eating it, I'm sure it's okay. Should I give this recipe for the 3-bean vegetable chili?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay, because it really is a good soup, especially if you've got vegans watching. I don't know, so it doesn't seem odd for a vegan to be a football fan.
No,
but anyway.
Absolutely not. But because going to millennials, but I just want to, one quick thing about soup suppers is I think that, I was surprised when I started reading it because every single it just seems like every recipe then could be for now, for people who are more, let's just say, particular in their eating habits. It's just, it's one of those, I hate these stupid words that go with, but it's just, it's timeless. It's as efficient to eat from now.
Well, thank you. Thank
you're welcome.
You. So I don't have a lot of time here, so and it's a long recipe.
Well, in that case, I'll shut up.
So, no, don't have to shut up. Well, listen, the genius of this recipe is, in the end, you feel like there could be meat in here. But what it really is bulgur. Did I say meat? But really what it is bulgur wheat. And I buy coarse ground bulgur for this. Do not buy fine, for sure. If all you can find is medium, that'll do. But if you can get coarse bulgur, you know, what bulgur is whole kernels of wheat that have been cooked and then dehydrated. So they really only have to be reconstituted by a liquid to become tender again. And I usually, if I'm making like a tabbouleh salad, I just pour boiling water over my bulgur and let it stand until it's tender. So, but you can cook it too. Anyway, you've got to sort of prep the bulgur. A 3/4 cup of coarse bulgur by reconstituting it in some liquid. In this recipe, I use fresh orange juice. But if all you have is water, it'll do. Because with so many other things in this recipe, a little bit of orange juice, although it's nice, is not essential. So as in many things, you saute onions and garlic. In this case, about 1/3 cup. This makes a lot of food, by the way. It serves at least 8, probably more like 10 or 12. So don't be worried about the quantity of oil. 1/3 cup of extra virgin olive oil, you saute 4 medium onions. That's 4 cups of onion diced. I do 1/4-inch dice. As well, and then when the onion is a little tender / golden, add your garlic, which is, in this case, 8 medium garlic cloves minced. And then stir in, you've got onions and garlic in there, stir in your dry ingredients, which are 1/3 cup of mild, unseasoned chili powder. So in that case, Jill, I would say 1/3 cup of unseasoned chili powder is probably equivalent to 1/3 cup plus a tablespoon or two of supermarket chili powder.
Good. And just
But I add my own other flavors, and I add to the 1/3 cup of chili powder 3 tablespoons of cumin, 3 tablespoons of dried oregano, 1.5 tablespoons of dried thyme, 1 to 2 teaspoons of cayenne. Now, if you don't like things spicy, keep it to the 1 teaspoon, and you can always add some more later. And here's a little secret ingredient, 1/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon. You can make that 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon. So you stir all those into your onion and garlic, and just let it, stir it in for, let the spices cook for about 5 minutes. And then you add your tomatoes. Now, when this book was written 26 years ago, the most common size for Italian plum tomatoes was 35 ounces. Those have almost disappeared, although you do see them here and there. But I use my 28-ounce can of Italian plum tomatoes with all the juice, and you add those to the pot and break them up with your spoon. I just use this. I actually have a flat wooden utensil that's wonderful for breaking up tomatoes. Sometimes because I just feel like doing it, I pour the tomatoes into a bowl and crush them in my hands and then add them to the pot. And then you have to add your liquid. Now, this is vegan, so there's no broth. 3 cups of water. You can use broth if you like. It'll, of course, add a little base note, or I should say undernote, to the chili, but water is just fine here. So you have your tomatoes and your water. Add some salt. I would say at least 2 teaspoons of salt, and bring it to a boil. Lower the heat, partially cover it because you don't want it to evaporate, and simmer this mixture for about 25 minutes, stirring it every once in a blue moon, meaning once or twice. Meanwhile, you want to cook your green beans. Trim them. I trim off both the top and the tail, and you want them a little crunchy because they're going to continue to cook in your chili. Cut them into about 2-inch pieces, boil them for 4 or 5 minutes, drain them, and then they're ready for the pot. Then you want to add 2 large sweet red peppers cut into 1/2-inch dice. This, you're going to add all of this to your simmering chili base. Green beans, half a pound, did I say that? A half a pound of green beans, two large sweet red peppers cut into half-inch dice, a package of frozen corn, I think that usually weighs 10 ounces, and, stir it once or twice, and then, finally, you stir in the bulgur, which is now reconstituted for all this time, and you keep stirring, and cooking it for about 20 minutes. It will thicken, your chili will thicken considerably, even though the bulgur has been soaked already. And finally, you stir in your already cooked green beans, the kidney beans, and the chickpeas, and simmer 5 minutes more. Sometimes I want the corn crunchy, so you can add that at the very end as well. And that's it. And this, by the way, you can garnish. Now, if you put sour cream on it, it's not vegan anymore, but I think there is actually a vegan kind of imitation sour cream. But you don't even need that. I like to put chopped scallions on top of mine. Michael McLaughlin, whose recipe this is, he always used to put grated raw zucchini, not my favorite thing to eat, although if you got really sweet zucchini, it's good raw. And that's it. You know what? You put all this out on the table. The chili actually doesn't have to be super duper hot, although it doesn't hurt. What I have? Speaking of feeling old, I am going through closets and stuff and trying to get rid of stuff and found my grandmother's electric soup tureens. If you have something like this, it's perfect for Super Bowl Sunday because you plug it in and it keeps the soup hot for hours, of course. Yeah. In fact, you got to be careful not to cook down the soup while it sits there with the heat.
Do you remember those electric fryers also?
It's a beautiful white ceramic tureen, but you can plug it in.
You know what would be good in your vegetarian chili as well? Mushrooms. What? Mushrooms.
Yes. Mushrooms are always welcome, I think.
Right. They're for the base note.
Yeah. So, I laugh when I see, this is vegan, that is vegan. Of course, they're items that never went near an animal to begin with, so I'm not sure why, but it's marketing,
Yeah.
So as I'm cooking these days, I say, this is vegan. I can sell this as vegan.
Right.
I'm not making it because it's vegan. It just happens to be vegan.
So how much more time?
We have about 2 minutes.
We have about 1 minute?
Yeah.
Yes. All right. So quick question. If you're going to the mushroom, this is mushroom context, please. Which mushrooms, if you were adding mushrooms to that, would you use?
Plain old white mushrooms.
Yeah.
Plain old soup,
absolutely.
If you want to make them fancy, then you can call them champignons.
Right. Perfect. Everybody listen to that, because I tell you, one of the generational things that I've noticed is, it has to be a portobello mushroom. No, actually, it doesn't.
Let me say this. Portobello mushrooms are a very dense, dry mushroom, and they are inappropriate for almost everything I see them used for.
Check.
So, and that, by the way, the portobello is an invented mushroom.
Check.
What they really are overgrown, what we now call cremini mushrooms.
Check.
Those little brownish ones, which taste ever so slightly better than the altogether white ones, but not enough better to pay a lot more money for them.
Check.
That's my opinion about cremini mushrooms. But sometimes I see them and they're a good price and I buy them because they are ever so slightly more flavorful. And they're not as dry as their adult brethren, the portobello. So the I don't want to do my whole portobello shtick these days, but they were invented in Pennsylvania by a clever man, and he was looking for a way to make porcini, but he never got there. Because porcini have a totally different texture than portobellos.
Right. Well, I want you to have a
good soup. By the way, a made-up mushroom, it's a made-up name, too. And that's why you sometimes see portobello or portobella. I think maybe one of those is a registered trademark, but I don't know which one.
Well, I want you marketing. I want you to have a good Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, enjoy the game.
When I'm not going to watch Super Bowl, I'll probably watch an old movie instead.
All right.
Mr. Harned has literally thousands of movies. dating back to the beginning of cinema, but not coming up to the present. And we have shelf after shelf, a whole room practically of DVDs. Let's watch them. So we've been watching at least one every other day. There are other things to amuse us too.
All right.
But if you haven't seen Jeanette MacDonald with Hosea Turby and Jane Powell, don't.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Take care, guys.
Take care.
Have a great warm week.
You too. All right. Bye-bye.
Have soup.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, and you can hear Arthur live every Monday, rebroadcast, and also online at robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.